Hey there, I'm Priscilla Shire. Thank you so much for joining us today on the chat. It is a treat to be here with you. I don't know if you've ever had this happen to you like it happened to me, that I was watching a television program, or maybe you heard a radio interview, or you just saw somebody from afar whose story was so moving, that mattered so much, whose story was so gripping, maybe by what you, the traces of it, the scars of it that you saw on them, it really impacted you in a way that stayed with you long after that interview was over or long after that conversation was over. It just kind of hung with you in your heart and in your mind. That happened to me. And it happened fairly recently, and right away I started putting as many things in motion as I could to be able to sit down with this guest myself, because I wanted to meet her. Her story is one of absolute tragedy, but one really that has a lot of beauty that rises out of these ashes. You're going to want to stay tuned today because you're going to want to meet Christy Sims. I'm going to let you hear her story. I'm going to let you see some photos. And I'm going to let you hear a 911 call that really sets in motion a course of events that is going to stick with you for a long time. Stay tuned. I was sitting on my sofa at home watching a woman being interviewed on a talk show, and I was riveted. I was riveted for many reasons, but also because when I looked at her, I saw strength, I saw courage, I saw a woman who was sure of herself and had a lot going for her. But I also saw a woman who, in the course of a day, her entire life completely changed because of domestic violence. Listen to this 911 call.
Henry County 911. What's up?
Yes, sir. I need an ambulance.
What's going on?
My girlfriend, we're just, I think it's drain cleaner. We're just putting it in the toilet and we slipped. Sit down, baby, sit down.
She fell? She fell?
Huh?
Is she bleeding from anywhere?
Oh my God. No.
Ask her, what is she complaining of? What is her chief complaint?
What?
What is hurting her?
It's burning her skin.
Okay, it's burning her skin?
Yes.
She fell on his Drano?
Yes. I'm sorry.
Can she get up?
Yeah, she sat down.
Okay, just 1 second. I'm going to get poison control on the line, too, okay?
What? I'm going to take care of her. I can't
okay,
call.
Listen, I'm going to get poison control on the line, okay?
Yes.
Hold on just a second.
Hold on, let me...
I have been looking so forward to meeting this woman. I know all of you are going to enjoy meeting her as well. Would you please help me to welcome Christy Sims? Christy, I've been waiting to meet you.
And I've been waiting to meet you.
And I'm so glad to lay eyes on you. You are beautiful.
Thank you.
You are a beautiful woman, and you have
Thank
a story
you.
To tell.
I do.
You do. Okay, we just, you know, it's very obvious when someone looks at you today, you look different than you did 2.5 years ago.
I do.
So tell us, just in a nutshell at first, just tell us what happened that caused this physical change in your life, really, that has changed the trajectory of your entire life because of it. What happened?
I made the decision, I was in a relationship with a guy for a few years, and I decided I did not want to marry him. And I started backing away from the relationship. And he sensed it. And on April 28, 2013, he called me to the bathroom of my house. He had been there with me that weekend. And before I could even get into the bathroom, he was right in front of me. He had a bowl in his hand, and he doused me with what I found out later was industrial-grade sulfuric acid. It's what people use all over the world to disfigure and disfame people's faces. So,
was there anything that was happening in your relationship leading up to this that would have given you an inkling that this was something he could do?
There were signs. There were warning signs in retrospect. To be honest with you, my backing away had a lot to do with the fact that my children didn't like this guy. They just would never warm up to him. And I had made the decision, you know what, I can't marry a guy that my kid, that, you know, there's nothing there. And he just became more and more possessive and controlling, mm-hmm. To the point where it was making me miserable.
So what did that look like? What did controlling and possessive look like in a specific way?
Going through my personal things, crossing boundaries, he would go through my phone, you know, find ways into my locked phone, and then drill me about what's in my phone, my personal phone. This is a guy that wasn't my husband, that didn't live with me. He would find ways into my computer, started accusing me of things that, you know, were just not true. You know, very jealous, very possessive. I worked in an all-male environment, and he had a problem with that, you know. So just things that I did not do to him, and I did not feel comfortable with him doing to me. You know, he made me feel very unfree. I felt like I had to check in all the time. Mm-hmm. And if I was missing for a few hours, he would have called me a million times during that time, you know. Mm-hmm. These are all signs of abuse. And to be honest with you, this guy was pretty much that way throughout the relationship. But I became more cognizant of it as I started to study human behavior, and as I became more aware of myself.
Because you were studying to be a counselor, so you were already in your master's degree program.
Yeah, I finished my master's degree about 6 months before this happened.
Okay.
He did this about 12 days before I was supposed to graduate. Mm. A lot of people say she was pursuing her master's degree. I was already working as a counselor. I was already helping people, and I had already earned my master's degree. But I'm the first woman in my family to get a master's degree, so I wanted to go back and walk. You know, at 42 years old, I wanted to wear the cap and gown. You know?
That's right.
So, and he knew that, and he knew how important that was to me. And I think that milestone, which was a great thing in my life, I think it felt like it was a ladder away from him, to him, you know.
Do you feel like he needed to go out of his way to kind of keep you in check, to when there's things to celebrate in your life where you're going up, that he needs to be the one to sort of kind of keep you down?
Yeah, this is a guy that didn't finish high school. You know, he owned businesses and things like that, but didn't value education the way that I valued education. Uh-huh. And always kind of, how do you put it, reduced the fact that I was an educated woman. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, I think it was because, you know, he felt inadequate in that area.
Yeah,
you know?
Insecure.
Mm-hmm. In that area. So.
Okay, so let's go back to that day. I want to know about, what were you doing? What was happening? What was your countenance like before this happened? So take us through that particular day up until the time when this happened to you.
I woke up about 10 o'clock that morning, and I just woke up with this excitement. You know, I had this, if you can imagine, I was 42 years old. I had just finished a really tough master's program. I was working in a job that I absolutely loved. My kids were happy. I had survived that whole divorce storm, and I was just happy. I was looking good. I was thin and cute, and, you know, I just had this one problem, this guy in my life that was making me feel uncomfortable. That's the best way I can describe it.
Did your friends or family know that this guy was now making you feel uncomfortable?
I had conversations with my friends, but to be honest with you, it's very complicated. You know, the cycle of abuse is very interesting because this guy was, you know, he would be controlling, but he'd also be this guy that brought me flowers. And
so he was slick.
Yeah, and told me he loved me a million times a day. But he got more, to be honest with you, he got sweeter as he felt me pulling away. And when I think about it now, it's because he held on tighter as I was moving away. Because he could feel it. He could sense it. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff, those games that he played all along, they were just not working anymore. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So
you're feeling good that day.
Feeling great that day. Just happy. Just like, when I tell you literally bouncing off the walls, I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be graduating next week. You know, had accomplished so many goals. I had made some promises to my children. I was going to travel with them. Mm. You know, they were 10 and 13 at the time, and I said, as soon as mommy finishes grad school, we're going to travel. We're going to do some things. We're going to have some fun. Because, you know, for 2 years, I was working during the day, going to school at night, and I missed a lot of stuff. I missed basketball games and a lot of things. And so I just promised them, I said, son, I'm never going to miss another basketball game. I'm never going to. And so when this happened, you know, right before this happened, I was just excited about being able to do those things that I had put on hold for 2 years. Mm. And it's almost as if I remember the look on his face that morning, and it was still no indication that I was in danger. He just saw how happy I was. And in retrospect, when I think about it, I'm like, you saw how happy I was. Mm. It's almost as if my happiness caused him a problem.
Right.
Like he was blinded by my light that day or something. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
pushed
what I felt.
Over the edge.
Exactly.
You're too happy.
You're just too happy, you know. And that's the last thing I remember. I remember being extremely happy. At 2 o'clock, I was blissfully happy. And at 2:30, I was in misery, in complete misery, burning alive.
Is that what it feels like to have acid thrown on you?
Yeah. It feels like, I've never been in a fire before, but from what I understand, acid is worse than being in a fire because it burns even once you're rinsed. It continues to burn through the cells of your body. I continued to burn for days, even in the hospital. My face continued to change its composition. And so acid, you know, this is not just a case of domestic violence. This is an acid attack, something that's a global issue. And it is now described, acid attack is now described as the most inhumane act against mankind. That's how horrible it is.
How were you able to make a 911 call?
He made the 911 call. He made the 911 call. I begged him to call 911. And on the 911 tape, they're telling him 6 times to rinse me off. And he comes over to me and stands over me and tells me, babe, they said not to rinse you off. Now, mind you, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that was sulfuric acid. I didn't know what it was. I just knew it was burning me. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm on fire here. I need water. He says, no, babe, they just said just sit here. Just as calm. And he's calling me baby the whole time. This is calm. No, babe, they said just to sit here.
How long were you there?
Probably about 13 minutes burning.
Before help arrived.
Sulfuric acid is used to melt metal. And he threw it in my eyes. I was blind for 4 months, the first 4 months. It's a miracle by God's grace and mercy that I'm here and that I can see, you know. So,
other than the scars that we can see, on how much of your body?
20%. Arms, full arms, my entire chest down to here. My entire neck has been replaced. My entire face has been reconstructed. These are not my original cheeks. This is not my original chin. This is not my original neck. My eyelids were sewn on.
How many surgeries?
I've had 13 total. That first few days, they took all of the skin from the back and fronts of my thighs to repair my chest and my arms. And they did a few grafts on my face. And then when I left the hospital, you know, you have to wait, when you're burned like this, you have to wait a whole year for them to work on your face. It has to mature. So I had to literally live behind a veil for a whole year before they could even do anything to my face at all.
When you say live behind a veil, do you mean literally fabric over your face?
My face was so disturbing, so unrecognizable that I could not go out in public. My first few media interviews I did veiled or either in shadow. And people now they understand because now I've started to release pictures of what I looked like in the beginning. But I could not release pictures of what I looked like, and I could not put that out there in the world because my children were still adjusting to the fact that their mother had changed. And I couldn't have those pictures on the internet. So every interview that I did in the very beginning, I had to do with sunglasses and veiled as a social responsibility. That's just how disfigured I was until I was able to have some facial surgeries.
How did you see yourself for the very first time? What was it like and how long after the attack was it when you saw yourself? Because you were in a coma for what, 2 months?
2 months, yeah. I went into the coma probably around the 30th of April 2013. I woke up around the end of June, mid to end June. I can't remember the date exactly. And within 2 days of coming out of the coma, I was in a burn unit at Grady. And I don't know if you can imagine what that's like, but everybody in there, it's just a very depressive type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was asleep for the whole time I was there, but when you wake up, you don't want to stay there much longer. And so my surgeon thought it would be best that I be moved to rehab. When you wake up from a coma, the misconception is that you can just get up and walk around. No, I had to learn how to use my arms again. I had to learn how to walk again. So they sent me to rehab at Emory Hospital. It's a hospital in Atlanta, mm-hmm. another great hospital in Atlanta. And during my time at rehab, there was a nurse who did not get the instructions that my family did not want me to see my face. Now, I still didn't have my vision. I was still legally blind at that time. But I could see enough to know that that was not the person who I was before. Mm-hmm. And so, I, you know, of course, I went into a depression. Now, the blessing is, you know, God is merciful, is that I didn't have my full vision. So the first time I saw myself, I didn't have my full vision. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize how I looked until a couple of months later. So if you can imagine, yeah. I'm existing, mm-hmm. knowing that I'm not the same, but did not have full clarity until a couple of months later, until my eyesight started to come back, which is a miracle.
And you're saying you're kind of grateful.
I'm
in
grateful.
Hindsight, you're grateful that
I'm
you
grateful.
Couldn't see the full.
Yeah, because uh-huh. that sounds crazy. I'm grateful for that coma because that coma allowed me to not be in agony. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for the fact that I didn't have my full vision because I would have lost my mind if I saw what I looked like coming out of that coma. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And so over time, we prayed and we prayed and we prayed, and my vision came back around August. I still don't have full vision in my right eye. My cornea is damaged. But, you know, I can see everybody in here pretty well. And that is when it hit me. I had already had probably about 4 interviews when I was able to see myself clearly for the first time. My daughter had seen me 1 time, and I felt so guilty after seeing myself, knowing that she had seen, that my kids had seen that.
And I want to know about that. How was it, what was the connection like with your children the first few times they're coming in contact with their new mom?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Priscilla, and I wanted to take an opportunity to invite you personally to join me for a 7-session Bible study on the armor of God. We'll dive deeply into what it means to be equipped to stand firm against the schemes of the enemy. He is very real, and he has been so strategic and targeted in his attacks against us. Why shouldn't we be equally strategic and targeted in standing firm against him? And you and I have an opportunity to suit up, to put on some armor that works, and to go to battle and to see victory declared in our lives and in the lives of those people that we love. This Bible study will be one that will change our lives forever and will help us to walk in victory. So plan to join me, won't you? The armor of God. How was it, what was the connection like with your children the first few times they're coming in contact with their new mom?
Yeah. My son, believe it or not, he handled it extremely well. He told me later that that was the only time he's cried. He's not a crier. He says, Mom, the only time I've ever cried was after I saw you for the first time. Mm-hmm. He came in, he was so brave, you know, that dad, and I guess he was trying to keep him uplifted so he didn't tell him how bad it was. Mm-hmm. He said, I really wish dad had told me how bad this was, you know, later. This is in retrospect. But when he saw me at the hospital, he saw me at rehab, and he saw me sitting there, you know, just a hot mess. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, at that time, my vision wasn't completely back, so I didn't even know how bad I was when he saw me. My daughter saw me when I got out of rehab. She saw me when I got home, and I was starting to get my vision back, but I still, it was not until I had my first, I had a surgery for my eyes that made my vision a little bit better, that I was able to see my face and see what my children had seen, and I just broke down in tears. Because I said to myself, they saw this, you know, and they were that brave.
Mama's heart doesn't change. You still wanting to protect your kids.
And they were that brave, you know. Yeah. I couldn't see my daughter for a while, though. She's very emotional, and she, you know, my son would come over because I couldn't even go home. I couldn't go home because my ex-husband literally moved into my house and he took over my duties in my house because I was just learning how to walk. I couldn't really take care of myself. Couldn't go home. And so my son would come to me and he would spend, you know, a couple of days with me at a time. But I couldn't spend that type of time with my daughter. And we were so close. Mm-hmm. And that was the hardest part of this whole journey, was that time away from my children.
How has this changed you? The external scars are obvious, but what other physical, are there any other physical things that were damaged that are not necessarily what we can see, but ways your life is now altered physically because of what happened?
I don't have comfort anymore. Like sitting here, and I talk about this all the time, people don't understand this, but burned skin does not have elasticity or moisture. My skin does not generate moisture. And it doesn't stretch, so I can feel every movement. Every time I open my mouth, I can feel myself talking. Every time I move my neck, I can feel my neck because my whole face has been grafted. Mm-hmm. So for the rest of my life, this doesn't go away. because it will never stretch. It doesn't stretch. Mm-hmm. So it's just a physical, it's not a pain. It's just a physical knowing that my skin mm-hmm. is there. I can feel my skin.
Do you feel like yourself? Do you feel like the same woman that was about to put on the cap and gown, beautiful, and you still are, by the way. I hope you know that.
Thank you.
I hope you see what we see as we look at you.
I'm getting
there. We see a woman of strength, of confidence, of beauty, of poise. Do you all agree with me? We see so much beauty when we look at you, and I hope that you see that as well, girl, because listen, the fact that you can sit here and talk about what you're grateful for, you have said gratitude or grateful at least three or four times yeah. in these few minutes we've been talking. And the fact that you can do that speaks so much to the kind of woman that you are.
I walk daily with an attitude of gratitude. And people always ask me, how do you get through this? How do you get through this? Because I find in everything that's wrong, I find something that's right. Like, I don't have elasticity in my skin, but guess what? I won't ever wrinkle. I won't ever wrinkle. At 90 years old, my skin will look just like this. Ain't God good? You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously.
That's awesome.
As crazy as that is, yeah. But my skin won't stretch like everyone else.
Look, I hope y'all realize we have absolutely no excuse ever again in our lives to ever not, you know, find something to be grateful for in yeah. the midst of whatever's going on in yeah. our life.
You would have to know, people get bits and pieces of my journey, but you would have to know all those sleepless nights and all those days in isolation. You would have to know my full story mm-hmm. to know why I give God so much glory. Mm-hmm. You have
and
to know the whole, the backstory.
Yes, and that's true for all of us. It's like, you don't know what
exactly.
the Lord has brought me
yeah.
through. You don't
people
know where
people see me
I've
out
been.
On TV and they feel so bad for me, but they just don't know how bad this was. This was bad. It was bad.
So you've come a long way.
I've come a long way.
How is your mother? I saw your mother on the interview that I watched, and I saw this woman of so much grace and poise. I could see the Spirit of God yeah. on her and in her. How has your mother been a blessing and a help to you through this, and how is she doing? Because you're her baby. So how's this for her?
My mother, how do I describe my mother? She is the definition of holy. See, I am approaching holiness. I have great potential for holiness.
Exactly.
I'm not quite there yet. I'm working on it. God is doing a work
we
in me.
We all are, yes.
He's doing a work in me. My mother is there. My mother has enough faith to carry me on the days when I feel weak. My mother is the one that played gospel music in my room 24 hours a day for 2 months. My mother is the one that stayed by my bedside for 10 to 12 hours a day. Sometimes more. My mother is the one that whispered in my ear every single day, greater is coming, baby, don't give up. Greater is coming. My mother is the one that would not let them graft the bottom half of my leg because she knows that I'm a sassy girl and I love wearing dresses. And she said, don't touch, leave her something to make her feel like a woman. And so normally I would be wearing a dress and people wonder why you wear dresses so much. It's because my mother did that for me. My mother is the one that told the doctors when they told her she would never see again. She said, the devil is a lie. She will see again. And I did see again. So my mother is that quiet strength, that person that takes care of me, that person who lost her husband. My stepfather died during this process. A year ago.
So she's dealing with taking care of her baby and...
Mm-hmm. And her husband who passed away of cancer. And so I feel a little bit of guilt about that. She spent the entire year of his life taking care of me. The entire last year of his life that she could have been with her husband taking care of me. So I feel some type of way about that, you know.
You shouldn't. Because that's exactly where your mom wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly where
But he stuck around. You'd have to know him too. He stayed around just long enough to see me out of the hospital, up, walking around again, and so
the readjustment, do you feel, it's been 2 years now, has it been over 2 years or just at 2 years?
It's been about two and a half years.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel some sense of normalcy now, or do you feel like that you don't ever think you're going to find normalcy, that it's just going to be a brand new experience altogether that you have to map out for yourself and for your children.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, because that's what people are. And people all have this tendency to say, oh, you're still the same Christy. You're still the same Christy. It is an insult to my journey to say that I'm the same Christy. I don't want to be the same Christy. You can't be the same person after all that I've been through. So what I'm striving for now.
Wait a minute. Back up, girl. Did y'all hear that? She said it is an insult to my journey.
Yeah, it is.
To say that I'm the same person that I was.
Exactly.
If you're tweeting stuff, you need to tweet that right there. That's so good, because yeah. You are. It makes us different. What we've been through, what the Lord has allowed us to go through for reasons we will never understand, why he allows certain things to happen in our life. But as we see fingerprints of his grace and his love and his goodness, it does reshape us.
It does.
Into entirely different people.
It does. And this has been some, I've been in the wilderness, and this past 2 years has been some biblical, I've had some biblical experiences. This is a biblical experience, to be honest with you. It is surreal, because this time, 2 years ago, where I was, what I looked like, I would have thought this would have been an impossibility. And so that's how I know when I have these experiences, I'm like, you know what, God, I see you. I see you. Because I'm just not supposed to be here. First of all, they said I wouldn't live, and if I live, they said I wouldn't be able to see. So not only am I seeing, I'm sitting here with Priscilla Shira. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. That's biblical.
Well, and you know what else is biblical? What shows signs of God's hand in tragedy is when we come out of it and we see the trajectory of our course change in such a way that he's going to get so much glory out of the direction that the tragedy took our life. It's not that we're thanking him for the tragedy. It's that we can be grateful that he can work all things together for the good of them that love him and are called according to his purpose. So to me, I see the fingerprints of God in that the enemy might have wanted to shut you up. Mm-hmm. But here you are sitting not only on this sofa, but on many others you have been on, telling your story. Mm-hmm. And you're so careful to give praise to the Lord through this story. It is such a testimony. And have you seen the course of your life, what you were passionate about, what you wanted to do, the direction you were going? In any way, have you seen all of that so turned in a completely different direction that you otherwise never would have taken?
When this happened to me, I was a mental health, HIV, and substance abuse counselor, and I was counseling all men. I was helping guys coming out of the correctional facilities and homeless guys. I was helping them get off drugs. I was helping them on a, like, I would counsel a group of 10 guys, and I would be, and they would be sitting on the edge of their seats listening to me, my little 5'2 self, never been on drugs before, but they would be on the edge of their seats listening to me. And I was really helping these guys transform their lives. I saw a lot of guys put drugs down, go back to their families and everything, and I saw this as a result of the work that I did with them. Mm-hmm. And I believe that God said, you know what? She can handle that, so she can handle even more. I'm going to give her even more. I don't know why I had to go through so much physical, emotional, just mental pain to get to where I am now, but God's ways are not our ways. And I know that God didn't cause this. I know that he allowed this because he is all powerful. Mm-hmm. But he had nothing to do with this. You know what I mean? He had nothing to do with this. He allowed this because he knew what I would do with it. Mm-hmm. He knew what I would do
with
it.
Here you are.
And I made a promise. I made a promise to God while I was lying in a coma. I said, God, if you just let me wake up, I don't care what I look like. If you just let me wake up.
So now this is while you're in a coma.
I had consciousness while I was in a coma.
So you have conscious thought, memory right now of
praying,
that time when you.
Me and God, we had all kind of talks. When you're lying in a coma, you can't talk to nobody but God.
So you're aware of people around you.
Yeah.
You're aware of voices you're hearing.
I told you, my mother played music for me 24 hours a day, not knowing that I could hear. I woke up from a coma 2 months later, and I knew every song on the radio, word for word.
Wow.
Word for word. Every gospel song. She kept the spirit of God. She kept gospel music in my ear 24 hours a day, not even knowing that I could hear, but I could hear every single word, and I could hear every single prayer, every single prayer. And in that coma, I said, God, just let me wake up. Don't let my children be motherless children. I just want to wake up and raise my kids. And if you let me wake up, I will glorify you publicly publicly, not in private, publicly for the rest of my life. And he continues to put me in public forums all the time because I never deny him. I never deny him because I kept, because he kept his promise and I kept mine.
And now your mission, one of your many probably, is to speak to the heart of women that could be in this exact same position and maybe don't even see it clearly. Right. They don't even know what's coming down the track.
Yeah, like me. I was in a cycle of abuse. You know, we put domestic violence into this box. A man's punching on a woman. She's walking around with black eyes. That wasn't the case for me. This guy didn't have financial control over me, but he did have control over me. Mm-hmm. He had control over me. He had me checking in, and I didn't even know why I was checking in. He had trained me to, if I was going somewhere, to call him, because I knew if I didn't call him, it was going to be an argument. That's control.
Yeah.
He had me, if I went to the gas station to pump my gas, he had a problem with me going to the gas station to pump my gas, because he was afraid I might see another guy, and the guy might want to pump my gas and be attracted to me. Home Depot. Anywhere where men frequent it, it was a problem. That's abuse. That's when anytime you make somebody feel uncomfortable in their own space, in their own, it's abuse. It's abuse.
Well, we want to talk about your foundation. We want to talk about where you're going, what your future looks like. The trajectory, the path, the brand new path that you are now on, what that looks like, and the message we can share to lift somebody who finds themselves in a similar situation that you were in. So listen, this is just part one of my conversation with Christy Sims. You are going to want to make sure you stay tuned, because in our part two, we're going to talk more with her. You see such strength from this woman. I most certainly do. We're sitting here getting a lesson in having faith and walking by faith and not by sight. And so I love the fact that you are here, my friend. Would you guys please help me thank Christy Sims for being here today? Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's so good.